And now on Nights with Steve Price
from the Australian and Sky News, Chris Kenny.
Chris Kenny, good evening.
G'day, Michael. How are you?
I'm okay. I tell you what, someone on Cloud 9 would be Nick Xenophon, wouldn't he? I mean, he might be legally about to be thrown out of the Senate, but it looks like he's going to be elevated to the top of South Australian politics if the polls are anything to be garnered.
Yeah, I don't know about the top. You know, I think the idea of him being Premier is fanciful, but I'm pretty certain he'll get elected to the lower house. And the important thing is with the incredible polling that he's doing, and he's always polled strongly since he got into South Australian politics. He snuck in initially, but then he's really consolidated over the years. I think he's on track to maybe win, you know, up to half a dozen lower house seats, but even if he only won four or five, he'd be in a situation where he basically gets to decide who forms government, who'd be the Winston Peters of South Australia come March the 18th next year, which is what his stated aim is. And I think he's certainly a strong chance to be able to do that, although he will presumably start to come under a lot more scrutiny than he's faced so far when it comes to his policies and his intentions.
I mean, all political parties take a little bit of time to sort of spin away from their founding father and then go into just being an entity. But with the Xenophon team, there is this cult of the personality, isn't there? I mean, most people would be hard-pushed to name anybody else who's actually a parliamentarian who is with the Nick Xenophon team.
Well, this is why people need to cool down when they talk about what it could do in terms of him being Premier. It's not a political party. It's a personal organisation. He controls it. He's already had a falling out with two people that he got into state parliament over the years who have walked away from him. So he's got to be careful about what sort of candidates he can pull together, what sort of quality people they'll be, how he can control them, how he can give them their own heads as well, how he can get organisations and volunteers to help him out. So, and this while he's running three senators and a lower house member in Canberra. So he's very, very thinly stretched. He doesn't have state policies. He's a populist and he says a pox on both your houses. And most people across the country, not just in South Australia, would agree that the major parties are on the nose. So he's capitalising on that. And he's really positioning himself to be that kingmaker. And this is where I think he really needs to be put under pressure by the journalists. I mean, one radio journalist today did that to him, but most of the time he just gets away scot-free. And that is, how about you tell voters before the election who you're intending to install in government? Does South Australia need a change after 16 years of Labor, or would you consider forming government with Labor? Put your cards on the table so people know what they're voting for, because at the moment, on the information that Nick Xenophon's put out there publicly now, people will be casting their votes in March in South Australia and then waiting till afterwards to find out what Nick Xenophon decides to do, just as we did with Rob Oakeshott in Australia.
Don't remind us, that was excruciating.
Yeah, just as we did in New Zealand this afternoon with Winston Peters. Mm. It's not good enough. He should be upfront about this before the election.
Well, you look at the voting record in the Senate of Nick Xenophon, and people have made this point to me, although I haven't looked at the tally myself. They say that he sided with the Greens more than he sided with the government. Is that true?
Oh, it's absolutely true. He tends to side with the Greens and against the government. He calls himself a centrist. I think that's a stretch. I think he's definitely left of centre. But he's a sensible bloke. He's a bloke you can deal with. I've always found him honourable, and I've known him since before he went into Parliament. I've followed his career all the way along. And I've always found him an engaging bloke, a smart bloke, a hard-working bloke. And he has always worked closely to try and deliver compromises with governments, but in the end, he's been left of centre. And in the end, he always wants the last say, the last little fiddle to grab some limelight for himself. And that's fine. That's smart politics. But what has he achieved? Well, you've got to ask yourself, why did he first go into politics?
Well, I was going to ask you on that, Chris. What's his legacy? He's about to leave the Senate. He's been there a while. He's been influential. He's been powerful to a degree. But what's the legacy of Nick Xenophon in Canberra?
Well, he had 10 years in South Australia before that, don't forget. He's going back to South Australian politics. And he went into South Australian politics promising to get rid or trying to get rid of poker machines. There are now more poker machines in South Australia than when he entered. So he certainly hasn't achieved his goals there. When he went to Canberra, he was going to concentrate on gambling law reform, and then he switched to River Murray issues. I don't think that anything extra has happened for the River Murray since the Howard government. I would have thought what he would point to himself is the defence contracts that have gone to South Australia, the $50 billion worth of spending on submarines and ships that's gone to South Australia to try and prop up the state economy. He will claim credit for that. I think it's a bit of a stretch because back in the Hawke government years, all that money was thrown at South Australia for the same sorts of reasons. And those defence contracts have always been shunted in that direction under the Howard government as well. So I think the Liberal Party and the Labor backbenchers from opposition all would have been lobbying for those contracts to be happening in South Australia anyway. So he's been on a unity ticket with the major parties on that particular issue, but he would argue that he put extra pressure on the parties to deliver. I don't think in the end he has achieved much except a lot of attention and claiming a lot of limelight for issues where he's been a player, to be sure. He's always been involved in the compromises in the Senate, but only one of many players.
And just in the 60 seconds we have left here, Chris, the killing season, as you wrote in your recent piece for The Australian, is upon us. That is, metaphorically speaking, in Canberra. Will Turnbull survive before Christmas?
Look, I've always think he's always thought he's more than likely to survive, but it is a perilous period. And this energy policy area is very, very tricky for him. I think we're starting to see already that that's not going to be smooth sailing for him. The gay marriage result will probably give him a bit of a lift. But then he's got the High Court decision to deal with, which would create a shambles. I think it's going to be a very, very difficult period until Christmas. You'd have to expect Malcolm Turnbull would survive. But what my point in drawing people's attention to that was just to say that he will be very, very relieved to get to Christmas, to the sanctuary of Christmas and a bit of a breather, because it's going to be absolutely stacks on the mill between now and then.
Yeah, I think that's completely true. Well done, Chris. Thank you. And, of course, people can catch you on Sky from 11 tonight.
Heads up from 11. Thanks, Michael.
Pleasure. Chris Kenny there. Now, stay with us. Good to have your company. Don't miss Chris Kenny, by the way, tonight, 11 o'clock on Sky.